And we're back with Judith Ivy. Speaking of voices, what does it mean to you when a playwright's voice is spoken about?
I think playwrights, oddly enough, it's their ear that gives them that voice. There are some playwrights who clearly are swayed and in tune and or in tune with their ear in very distinct ways, which make them distinct from any other playwright. The most obvious to me is Edward Albee. He definitely had listened to people, because a lot of what he writes is very real, and yet he had a very distinct feeling about what he heard, and he infused that with his own, you know, commentary about people who spoke that way, about people who thought that way. I think one of the playwrights today who really tantalizes me is Annie Baker, and she really taps into all kinds of situations. I've done readings of her play that are directly around a family, and then you take Circle Mirror Transformation, that's sort of a faux family where everybody's in class together. The aliens, there's a, I guess they're brothers, right? I think. And then the flick, I mean, that's just a whole nother situation. I guess you could say there's a family unit to that. There's a thread in her writing, I'm trying to get to, of about relationships and what the connections are. And she clearly is an amazing observer, and I think she has a remarkable ear. I think Amy Herzog is same way, very in tune with the way people speak, particularly of today, or in juxtaposition to someone of today in 4,000 miles, you have, what, an 80-year-old woman dealing with her grandson, and they get stoned together. It's she goes out there in the what-if situation in a way that fascinates me.
What about working with dialects? What kind of resources do you like to use to find a character's speaking voice?
I hope I can find the real deal whenever and get as authentic as possible.
Yeah.
That's not easy if you're... When I did Shirley Valentine, I'd have to go all the way to Liverpool. And, you know, there are variations, as you well know. If you just say Liverpool, there's even however many different dialects within Liverpudlian speak. Mm-hmm. So I rely heavily on the internet now. Mm. You know, it used to be I relied on you. I relied on our dialect coach, what they could provide for me. Would it be tapes? Could I have private? Could I sit with you? I much prefer in person, because you can watch me and determine even something I'm completely unaware of that I'm relying on that's in my way in the speaking process. When I played Margaret Thatcher, it was maybe the most difficult, next to Shirley Valentine, because of the sound. You know, I'm little Judy Ivy. I talk here, and Margaret Thatcher is much more there, and it's not... You know, we just, Americans don't even open up enough for that to really ever happen.
Right.
So it was a real challenge to find the place.
Yes, there's not a lot of roundness in the mouth.
No, there's not.
No, it goes right to the throat or right to the nose. Or...
Right.
So talk a little bit about what it's like, or do you register this, the crossing of cultural boundaries when you're doing a dialect? So much of... I think an actor's work is getting into a comfort zone where they feel like, I have a right to do this. And is that process more difficult when you're crossing a cultural boundary, like one that exists between the United States and Britain?
Well, I think that, if I may be so bold, I think that the American audience is much more open-minded to the actor from United Kingdom performing what we would call an American accent. And I think that the British actor will be a little more on our case when we turn around and do the like. And usually for the same reason that probably me, who is not very forgiving of British actors doing American dialects, for the same reason, which is it has to be specific. And so when you play Margaret Thatcher, not only are you looking for a whole tonal thing that is not American, she was someone who actually came from a part of London, outside London, I believe, and then affected a sound. So you're layering in, a complexity of a lifetime, really, because she worked so hard to sound a certain way when running for public office, the way she did. And people from Great Britain know that. That's a given. I could do my Margaret Thatcher for the American audience and possibly be flawless to their ear. Would it be flawless to the British audience? I don't know. I would thrill to no end when Helen Mirren and the other British actors, Rufus and Richard, would come up to me and say, "You're sounding just like her." And I'd think, "Oh, thank you so much. I just..." It was that vote of confidence was beyond anything that any American could say to me. I think it is hard because the way we speak is so much a part of our culture. And so you can be so protective. I can listen to Texas dialects and say, "That's not Texas. You're not doing that right." Likewise, because I've done as much Massachusetts, I'm pretty good at saying that's not accurate. But our country's so vast, and there's so many places with nuance that to be truly specific is kind of hard. And I don't think most people's ears are trained well enough to know whether or not you're failing or succeeding, so you get to cheat a lot. Culturally, I want to honor it. Back to your question. I want to be as close as I can possibly be because that's part of the story you're telling.
What are the changes that you notice in perhaps the attitudes that are reflected in the way people communicate now as opposed to what you may have remembered when you were growing up?
Well, the obvious is all the technology we have at our, as we just reach out across the table, there's a phone, there's a TV, there's the computer. There's so many ways to communicate with each other that don't have to do with sitting down. I mean, the number of actual phone calls that I would make in a given day to my friends is radically different than it used to be because that was the only way to communicate.
Right.
If you couldn't be in the same room. Therefore, I think that the ability to converse has changed.
The actual ability to converse.
To converse.
The skill itself.
I think so. My daughter has a wonderful conversational ability. And I know that came from us never excluding them from any gatherings in our home. That they were present. They watched us talk. They sat at a table and watched grown-ups talk. She's 20, how old is she? She's 27. My son is 23. And just that four-year difference, I think when phones and everything started taking over computers, there's just enough of a difference that he's not, and it's not about his personality. He's a great conversationalist when you engage him, but he's a bad conversationalist in the sense that it's not give and take, but he's getting better.
Yes.
And I think that was something that was just more, I can remember sitting and talking. I can remember my brother sitting and talking and having a conversation and not being, let's say, mute or focused on something else. And that's part of our ability to be distracted and not demand that of one another.
Yes.
Even sitting in, something that has nothing to do with that, I had to learn because I was so used to auditioning since I started out in the theater, once I started doing film and television, a lot of times you go in and you interview before you ever audition, if you audition at all. And I was terrible at it because it meant I had to have a conversation in a very stilted way, you know, with act as if we're old friends. And I never met you before. What would I have to say to you? So I had to work on that in order to be able to converse and let them see I'm a rational human being. You might have fun with me. you could spend the next month with me.
Yes.
I could take direction, whatever, which is what a lot of those interviews are about.
Right, right.
They don't need you as their new best friend. They just want to see that you are approachable and
yes.
rational is a good word. Anyway, so you learn how to speak for various reasons, and I think there are fewer and fewer reasons to speak to each other, which is kind of sad.
Mm. Do you notice all of our communication options now? Has that changed the way young performers, directors, and producers approach things in ways that you think are notable in any way?
You know, I don't know the answer to that. I would say that, first of all, they have access to so much more than when I was, let's say, in my early 30s, to go look something up, simply. I mean, you know, we now say Google me. There, it's a verb.
Yeah.
There's a way to go and find out all kinds of things, whatever you want, whether it be for research or what this director has directed before you met him or her. There's a change. There are female directors now. Mm. I don't know that it actually changes the way they work. From all the young actors I've directed, I would say they still go about it in the same way that I go about it. I don't see them, you know, approaching the work in a different manner that I could attribute to the gadgetry of today. I do think that there is, because everything is so instantaneous that you can go and get it, in a funny way, there's less interest in terms of history. And that's certainly something that I have noticed, that they, I'll mention a name, you know who you remind me of, Geraldine Page, and they just stare at me and they admit they don't know who Geraldine Page is.
Right.
I have a feeling, had someone said, you know who you remind me of, if they said Theda Bara, I would have known who Theda Bara was. I might not have known a whole lot about her, but that sense of history was emphasized more. Maybe we don't need to emphasize it because you can go and look it up so easily. Mm. That would be the only thing I've ever noticed that's different.
The one thing I do need to ask you before we wrap up, what about the role of the drama critic in the theater?
Oh, unfair. Why do we need them? Well, I think the role is, it's not for us as artists. I think it's there for the people who pay money.
Yes.
That's why I don't read them anymore, because even the good reviews are harmful over to your performance. It doesn't mean that a bad review is what destroys one. I've literally watched myself change something because when I was reading reviews, they said something lovely about me, and I focused on it, and then I ended up ruining the moment because I was reading the review.
Yes.
However, I've just changed the word from critic to review, and I think that probably in my career's lifetime, which is now 40-something years, we have more reviewers than we have critics. And, you know, all the more reason for me not to read them, because I don't need it reviewed. I review it every day that I go to work. It needs to be reviewed for people who want to say, do I want to spend $149 times four to take my family to see?
Yeah.
And I don't blame them. I wish they were a little more adventurous and not quite so reliant on them, that they could feel that they could splurge that much money. And if they're disappointed, they're disappointed.
Yeah. Before we end up here, I just want to throw out a couple of names for you here and have you say a word or two about what their essence speaks to you. Helen Hayes.
Well, talk about history. She's one of the grand dames of the theater.
Jason Robards.
Jason Robards was and still is my mentor.
Chita Rivera.
Oh, another grand dame of the theater, especially when she puts her dancing shoes on.
Mike Nichols?
Mike Nichols. Wow. He is, to me, oh, there's so much. See, I can't put it into very few words. Mike Nichols is the theater.
Raul Julia.
Gorgeous, romantic.
James Earl Jones?
Ooh, he might not like this. He is the godfather of us all, our leader.
Noel Coward.
I wish I was that funny and smart. Mm.
Tennessee Williams.
He created American theater.
Lorraine Hansberry.
She created American theater, a side that nobody took time to write about until she did.
I want to thank you so much for taking the time to come and speak to us here today on the podcast. It was so enjoyable. We don't have nearly enough time to speak about all the things that I want to ask you about. I hope you'll come back at some point and we can talk some more.
Sure.
Well, that'll do it for us today, folks. And until we meet again here at the Dialect Coaches Corner, remember to communicate responsibly. Or in the words of Sue W. Butler, my mother, don't blame on your shoes the faults of your feet.